when he wasn't writing letters. Yarber caught himself thinking about the money. Thankfully, the divorce papers from his wife had come and gone. He'd be officially single in a few months, and by the time he was paroled, she'd have long since forgotten about him. Nothing would be shared. He'd be free to walk away without a single string attached. 5 years, and he had so much work to do. He'd cut out the sugar and walk an extra mile each day. In the darkness of his top bunk, during sleepless nights, Hatley Beach had done the same math as his colleagues. $50,000 in hand, a healthy rate of return somewhere, add to the principal by squeezing from as many victims as they could catch, and one day there'd be a fortune. Beach had 9 years, a marathon that once seemed endless. Now there was a flicker of hope. The death sentence they'd handed him was slowly becoming a time of harvest. Conservatively, if the scam netted him only $100,000 a year for the next 9 years, plus a healthy rate of return, then he'd be a multimillionaire when he danced through the gates, also at the age of 65. 2, 3, 4 million was not out of the question. He knew exactly what he'd do. Since he loved Texas, he'd go to Galveston and buy one of those ancient Victorians near the sea, and he'd invite old friends to stop by and see how rich he was. Forget the law. He'd put in 12-hour days working the money, nothing but work, nothing but money, so that by the time he was 70, he'd have more than his ex-wife. For the first time in years, Hatley Beach thought he might live to see 65, maybe 70. He, too, gave up sugar and butter, and he cut his cigarettes in half with the goal of going cold turkey real soon. He vowed to stay away from the infirmary and stop taking pills. He began walking a mile every day in the sun, like his colleague from California. And he wrote his letters, he and Ricky. And Justice Spicer, already equipped with sufficient motivation, was finding it difficult to sleep. He wasn't plagued by guilt or loneliness or humiliation, nor was he depressed by the indignity of prison. He was simply counting money and juggling rates of return and analyzing point spreads. With 21 months to go, he could see the end. His lovely wife, Rita, had passed through the week before, and they'd spent 4 hours together over 2 days. She'd cut her hair, stopped drinking, and lost 18 pounds, and she promised to be even skinnier when she picked him up at the front gate in less than 2 years. After 4 hours with her, Joe Roy was convinced the $90,000 was still buried behind the tool shed. They'd move to Vegas, buy a new condo, and say to hell with the rest of the world. With the Percy and Ricky scam working so well, Spicer had found a new worry. He'd leave Trumbull first, happily, gladly, without looking back. But what about the money to be made after he was gone? If the scam was still printing money, what would happen to his share of the future earnings, money he was clearly entitled to? It had been, after all, his idea, one he'd borrowed from the prison in Louisiana. Beach and Yarber had been reluctant conspirators at first. He had time to devise an exit strategy, just as he had time to contrive a way to get rid of the lawyer. But it would cost him some sleep. The letter from Quince Garb in Iowa was read by Beach. Dear Ricky, or whoever the hell you are, I don't have any more money. The first $100,000 was borrowed from a bank using a bogus financial statement. I'm not sure how I'll pay it back. My father owns our bank and all its money. Why don't you write him some letters, you thug? I can possibly scrape together $10,000 if we can agree that the extortion will stop there. I'm on the verge of suicide, so don't push. You're scum, you know that? I hope you get caught. Sincerely, Quince Garb. Sounds pretty desperate, Yarber said, looking up from his own pile of mail. Spicer said, toothpick hanging from his bottom lip, tell him we'll take $25,000. I'll write him and tell him to wire it, Beach said, opening another envelope addressed to Ricky.